Hello and welcome to episode 155 of the Rilo and Slappy Show. Today is July 29th, 2019. Actually, it's the 30th. We're recording the intro after we recorded the main part of the show, but we started the show on the 29th. I am Rilo McFlugel, and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we are both from McFlugel.com. Show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/155. Where you will be able to find links to some of the things we talk about in this episode, as well as part one of this episode, which we released 2 weeks ago. And finally, you can also check out libertymugs.com, where you can buy libertarian-themed mugs. And with that, I don't want to delay us any more than we have to. I'm going to hand it over to Slappy, and he's going to introduce this episode.
Thanks, Rallo. Today, as Rallo mentioned, or tonight, or this morning, wherever we are, we interviewed a new friend of mine who I came in contact with, first became aware of several months ago, but just recently met. And we built up a little bit of a friendship, and we had James Nixon on. We interviewed him. He was one of the defendants in the trial I was a juror on. So, without any delay, here is the interview. All right, James, welcome to the Rilo and Slappy Show.
How you doing? Thank you for bringing me on tonight.
Yeah, so thanks for coming on. This is kind of a really cool thing for me. A couple weeks ago, we talked about this case on this podcast and my experience being a juror on it. And now we have one of the defendants who we acquitted. So this is really, I don't know how often that happens, James. Have you ever heard of that?
No, never heard of it. Okay.
So we were interested in hearing your story on how the whole, I mean, as much as you want to tell from the beginning to the end. I mean, I talked about this and, I did not see any evidence for what you were charged of, which was conspiracy to distribute PCP. I imagine the day you got arrested, it was pretty shocking. Can you tell us a little bit, give us a little background and the lead up to that point, if you would.
Okay. Well, my name is James Nixon. In 2015, September 17, 2015, the DEA and Attorney General Task Force, State Attorney General Task Force, they executed search warrants. And during this execution, I was leaving out the front of the building of this property. And they found, you know, some things. They found some PCP and other things and cocaine and, you know, other things like that. So I thought it was a movie because there was so many cops, like tanker type trucks. And
did they really?
Myself, like, I couldn't believe it, you know, I just didn't believe it.
Did they present you with a warrant?
No, they didn't, present, no warrant to anybody. And it's kind of, it's crazy because, they falsified a document saying that I came out the rear of this building, 3140 North Broad Street.
Right.
Said I came, you know, Agent Mango from the Attorney General Task Force, and my pros report, far as facts of the case, he stated that when they was executing the search warrant, I was coming out of the rear of the building.
Of 3140?
Yes. The rear of the building on Rosewood Street.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I came out of the rear of this building, and I was stopped. I was patted down. They found an ounce of PCP in my pocket, and keys, and $1,800 in currency. So this particular agent put me in the rear because this is where they say all the alleged dealings was taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And he said I had an ounce of PCP and $1,800 because it makes me look like a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's far from the truth. Fox 29 News, which they just took it down within the last month or two, or maybe a couple months ago, they took the actual footage down of the raid. And on this footage, you would see me in front of the building on Broad Street. Not the rear of the building. I came out of the front of the building, which is on Broad Street. I was patted down, and I was sticking to the rear of the building after that. So this is when I seen all the other people that was in the building. So what they did was they walked everybody out the building. It's a three-story building. It's apartments on the first floor, second floor, and the third floor. So they walked everybody out the building through the rear. They didn't bring them out the front the way I came out. Because when they raided, I was in the vestibule area, which is by the front of this particular property.
And talk about the property just a little bit, because wasn't there a hair salon or something, yes, right, on the, yes, first floor?
Yes, it was a hair salon on the Broad Street side. When you first go in, it's a hair salon to the left. Then if you go down the hallway, that's the first apartment. But if you go, when you first come in the door, if you can go straight, it was a door, you can go straight up to the second floor apartments. So that's the setup of the actual building. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was the salon there, and the salon didn't have anything to do with anything. You know, it was a female owner salon. You know, she a legal, honest person. So I was laying on my stomach. I was trying to open the door to walk out, but they came to the rear of the building, which is on Rosewood Street. So when they unlocked the door and took me out, they patted me down and they took me to the back of the building. But I was out front for at least about 10, 15 minutes before they took me around the back of the building. That's when I seen everybody else. So they brought everybody down from the third floor and the second floor through the back. They took them out the back. I never knew they brought anybody out until I got around the back of the street. So when I got to the back of the street, you know, they was, you know, doing their searches and bringing stuff out and, you know, all this type of stuff that, you know, they do. Then I was taken to 8th and Reese, and I was processed, and I was taken to CFCF. It's a county jail, a county holding place for, you know, guys who get locked up.
In Philadelphia?
Yes. Actually, they took about five or six of us there, and they took two guys. The DEA came and got two guys and took them to federal custody. And so while waiting to go to a preliminary hearing, we went to three preliminary hearings. The first preliminary hearing we didn't get in, but my mother told me that you know, things they were saying in the courtroom, and they was trying to say that these guys are a gang because, you know, basically they saying the neighborhood we come from, which is Diamond Street. I grew up in a project called Raymond Rosen. It's in North Philadelphia. And we call it Diamond World. It's not a game. It's a name that we gave our neighborhood. Everybody call it this. If you go to the Raymond Rosen site, we got a Facebook page. It's called Raymond Rosen. If you go to that on Facebook page, you will see it's over 1,700 members.
Wow.
And everybody say Diamond World because this is just a name that everybody called the neighborhood. It's not a gang. We're not a gang. If a person grew up at Cotman and Charlesdale, which is the Northeast, and he say, I'm from Cotman and Charlesdale, wherever you go, whoever you meet, do this particular person mean he in a gang? So this is how they try to label us in the inner cities. The DEA and the feds, you know, these other agencies, they say we're gangs because we say we're from this particular neighborhood. But that's not the case. And so we went to the preliminary. Actually, I didn't get in that preliminary hearing. So a week later, we went to another preliminary hearing. We didn't get in that. Then they postponed it for like, I think, 2.5 months or 3 months.
So when you say that you didn't get into the preliminary hearing, that, yes, meant that you were like scheduled to have your, you know, your. In court, and then they just said it's not today?
Yes, we were scheduled to have it, but
okay.
I guess it was a lot of conflict going on, and they postponed it.
Now, while they're postponing this, are you free? Are you out, or are you in jail?
No, I'm incarcerated, and I was on a $750,000 bill. Everybody was.
Whew! How'd they come up with that number?
Hey, when I seen it, it shocked me. you know, it was no type of aggravated assaults or, you know, anything
That's
like that.
That's insane. There was no even allegations of violence, at least from what I saw.
Yes. So, you know, they found, you know, some PCP, and they found some cocaine, and they did find a gun outside of the property. But, you know, it's basically a typical drug case. And they gave everybody $750,000 bill. So I couldn't make that, period.
Did anyone try to make that?
No.
No, that's the point of the high bail.
Yeah, there's not many people that can make that bail.
Yeah, nobody can do that.
Yeah, that's what they do here in Philadelphia, though. Philadelphia, you get a gun case, your bail would be $350,000 or $300,000.
But
knowing guys can't make this bail, like, and that's not even the proper bail. They setting people bails way past the limit that it should be.
Well, that's absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's what's going on in Philadelphia, though.
Now, you didn't, I mean, at least nothing that went to federal court, you didn't have any gun charges on you.
No, I didn't have any gun charges. So now pertaining to this, well, you know, I was arrested twice for this case.
For the same exact case?
Same exact case. I was charged in the state, and they charged me with, the guys who I got locked up with, they charged me with corrupt organization. They trying to say that we's a gang and, you know, we's organizing things like that. So when we finally get in the preliminary hearing, Asia Mango was called to testify at the preliminary hearing. And by the way, the same Asia Mango from the Attorney General Task Force is being sued right now for, I believe, falsifying documents. And the same Asia Mango is the one who wrote the report. And I had a PARS report. I was in a car. He the one wrote the PARS report and said I came out the rear, but that was a lie. He falsified that document too, because Fox 29 News got me in front of the building, which is on Broad Street. And I'm gonna get to that. So Asia Mango get on the stand, and he's testifying that these guys is in the gang, these guys is conspiracy, and he's testifying that this is the place where, you know, PCP was sold and cut and things like that. So, you know, when he mentioned a gang, my lawyer objected. All lawyers objected. There's no evidence of a gang. So they said, well, we're going to show photos and things like that. So my lawyer asked Agent Mango, he said, Agent Mango, didn't you just tell me in the hallway that my client was incarcerated? Yes, I did. But I have my transcripts. I don't have them right here with me, but I had the transcripts. He said he was adamant about me still purchasing PCP from a person. So my lawyer like, well, how could he be incarcerated and be in a gang? So he was like, I know he was buying drugs. I know it. So my lawyer said, well, was he in the warrant? He said, no. He said, was he described in a warrant? He said, no. Oh. He said, he asked him, you know, this question pertaining to the warrant. So everything, he was like, no. He said, did you see him buy any drugs to anybody? No. So he said, yeah. He said, how did you know he's buying? Because I know. He said, because I know he was buying drugs. So I'm not the warrant. I'm not described in the warrant. I'm not in the probable cause affidavit to get the warrant for the Attorney General Task Force. I'm not. And I got the paperwork to show all this. So I was stopped and I was taken into custody about this. So it's a blessing, because when we finally had, you know, we had this preliminary hearing, the judge, we can go into a little more. I'm sorry, agent. This is new to me. I'm a little no, stuff like that. You know, I'm,
no problem, man.
No problem, man.
Person. I don't like the spotlight at all. But
nah, you're doing great, man.
This need to be talked about, because there's so much corruption in the system.
I agree.
So much racism still going on, and that's a part of this corruption in the system. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad. It's real sad that these guys who took an oath to tell the truth and protect the citizens, they were easy to get on the stand and falsify documents and lie on people. It's bad. Like, it breaks my heart, what I'm living in. Because I have a son, he's 25, he works, and I got a daughter, 18. I got stepkids who, kids, but, you know, God's willing, they grew up to be, beautiful, outstanding citizens, you know. So, but I'm still fearful of this was going on in America, you know, not just for myself, but for other people's families as well, white, black, I don't care, you know, what color you is, because it can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So Agent Mango said I had an ounce of PCP in my pocket. And so later during the preliminary hearing, they had an expert get on the stand. And I forget his name. Like I said, I got all my paperwork. He testified that what I had on me was less than a quarter ounce of PCP. Far from an ounce.
Not close to an ounce.
Yeah.
Ounces, 28 grams.
Mm-hmm.
And a little more than a quarter ounce might be, it's way off. It's way off.
Sure. So you get caught way off. Let's say it's like 7 grams, right?
If they were
going to charge you with possession of 7 grams of PCP, what kind of sentence does that carry? Do you know?
Nothing. Probation.
Yeah. But if they get you with a corrupt organization or a conspiracy, what does that carry?
Well, in the state, I was probably looking at about more than 10 years in the state as well.
Yeah.
So were they just grabbed you? Found the PCP and decided, we can get him on this conspiracy charge?
Yes, well, this is the funny thing. When we first got locked up, they took me to the state. They didn't have a corrupt organization charge. That came months later. I just had conspiracy. And I had conspiracy, I had possession, which was the little stuff I had on my possession. They had to keep that on me in case everything else.
Just in case it fell apart, right?
So they kept the possession, and they gave, and I had a woofer, a gun. The person. They found the gun outside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave everybody that gun.
Right, right. That's one of the things. This needs to be talked about in our jury instructions. And sorry to cut you off, James.
Okay.
But they said once you establish a conspiracy, anything that any member does can be attributed to any member of the conspiracy.
Yeah.
And so if they establish a conspiracy and someone, say, murdered someone, every member of that conspiracy can be charged with murder.
Yes.
And that didn't happen in this case.
No, it didn't happen.
But it could be. And that's a crime in and of itself.
Exactly.
That's I didn't realize that. That's absolutely insane.
It's insane.
Exactly. No, this is what they do, man. This is what they do. I got a lot to talk about, so let me try to.
Yeah.
Take your time. Say what you want.
Okay, on a preliminary hearing. So, this particular officer testified what I had on me was less than a little more than a quarter ounce. He said first, I think he said I was confused. He said because I thought, you know, they were trying to say everything was his. He said, I was confused at first. This is what the guy I testified to. And I maybe could share my preliminary hearing notes at a later date. You know, So this particular officer said, but now, you know, I see, you know, he basically said this is what he had. He had was a little more than a quarter ounce. So he said out this particular bottle he could have got, or this particular amount, he said he could have got about 10 to 15 dip cigarettes. This is what he told the judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said it cost about $100 on the street.
For a quarter ounce?
Yes. Yeah, so the judge said, well, so this could have went either way. Either he could have been selling it or using it. So the officer said, correct. So he said, under your opinion, you know, tell us, you know, what you think. So the officer said, simple, you know, possession. I forget the term they use for, but simple possession.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yo, I thought so. The judge said, okay, remand back down and, you know, drop the conspiracy, all the other stuff, and just hold up the simple possession on him. That's what the judge said. So the judge knocked everybody's stuff down to a corrupt organization, the conspiracy, and just kept the misdemeanors on everybody.
So the judge essentially said, we just don't see a conspiracy here. There is no gang. There is no conspiracy. And this is in state court?
Yes, this is in state court.
Yeah.
Now, this is funny because We in state court. Oh, Agent Mango also testified that it was a joint investigation and that they had other guys that's in federal custody. And he named the guy that he had in federal custody, which was Naeem Gordon, Hakeem Gordon, and Jermaine Gordon. They was in federal custody. Wow. I think it was six of us, if I'm not mistaken, or five. I can't recollect. But we was taken to the state. But the same evidence that was gathered by the agency, we was prosecuted in the state, and the same evidence was used in a federal case.
So the same evidence that I would have heard in the courtroom was what you were arrested for initially in state court.
Yes. Yes, the judge was asking, you know, the lawyers are saying, well, where's this evidence at? He said, we'll show it later. But he said, we'll show it later at trial. So they argued, the lawyer said, no, you got to show that now. Show us something. Show us something.
Right.
No cells. There's no cells. You know, show us something. And they couldn't show nothing. So the judge told them, you got drugs, but you don't have no racketeering. You don't have no, where's the cells and stuff at? You know, and my lawyer was telling, you know, arguing that this is an apartment building, a 3-story apartment building, and just because people come and go, that don't mean that they are doing any or selling any drugs,
right? Especially with a business in front.
Yes, and it's just a line. So you know, and the judge was agreeing is you can't just target people. You understand what I'm saying? So
it's a Fourth Amendment violation, right?
Yeah. So no, this is what happened in the state. So when they threw the serious charges out, you know, and for misdemeanor court, you go head out with the judge for trial. You don't pick a jury.
Yep.
For misdemeanor. So we were scheduled the following week to go to court on the misdemeanor. So we went to court on the misdemeanor. The sheriff come and start calling our names. Dismiss. So when he got to my name, he said, dismissed. So, you know, I praise the law because I'm Muslim. I said, praise be to Allah because, you know, and I was just happy, you know. So
yeah, I'm sure you were. Yeah.
I got out a few days later because I had a parole detainer on me because I was serving out the remainder of my parole detainer on the street, which I was reporting to my PO. I had an under the table job. You know, I was, you know, trying to do the right thing when I was arrested for this. So. Mm-hmm. I got out 8 months later. You know, I was reporting every month to my PO. So 8 months later, I get a phone call on August. No, I came home January of 2016, about 5.5 months later, from September 2015 to January 2016, about almost 5 months, a little more. Mm-hmm. I forget the exact date. So from January to August, I'm out there doing the right thing, reporting, working. So August, I get a phone call. Now, mind you, I see my PO every first of the month. So I see him at the beginning of August. So I get a phone call. I believe it was August 22nd, which was on a Monday. He said, I need to see you. So I said, okay. So I said, well, I just came to see you, though. What's going on? Now, honestly speaking, because I like to tell the truth, you know, I had a hot yarn before. I gave a hot yarn.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, my supervisor want to see what's in your system. So I said, okay. So he said, come in Wednesday. I said, okay. So Wednesday morning, I get a text. He said, I'm waiting on you. So I said, I found that to be kind of strange because he never texted me, said he waiting on me or anything like that. But I had a funny feeling something went right. And, you know, I said, I'm not running or nothing like that. Like, I'm too old for that stuff. You know, I did all that stuff when I was, you know, a kid. I'm trying to get my life together. I'm trying to, you know, have a clean name, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just tired of, you know, worrying my family and things like that. Yeah, I made a lot of mistakes, but I'm not a bad person, though. So I called him, and I said, I'm on my way. And I was actually kind of mad that he texted me. So I said, I'm on my way. So when I get there, get out the car, I don't think nothing, but I still think it's kind of funny. So when I go inside the building, I let the receptionist know I'm here to see my PO. So I happen to look out the door I came in, which is the vestibule, everything glass, vestibule. When you first come in, it's the vestibule area, then you come in inside the place, and they got the seats. So I look out, and I can see I seen Torres. Adrian Torres, I seen him. So I said, I just shook my head. I just shook my head. And it's crazy because I had a gallon of water, right? And I was drinking my water when I was in the back of a we call it the family cab. It's like Uber, but it's Uber cheaper. But I called a particular company, and I was drinking a gallon of water. And I drink a lot of water. So I set the gallon of water on the curve, on the side of the curve. He opened the water up and smelled it. I guess he thought he had a bus or something. I don't know. because they say gallons of PCP come in gallon bottles.
Yeah.
So he smelled it, and I know he felt stupid. So they came and stood in front of the door.
They wouldn't let, in case you tried to leave?
Yeah, they came and stood in front of the door, right? So I just said to myself, guess I'm ready to get locked up. This ain't nothing else to do. So my PO come in, he's smiling. I'm looking at him like, so they take me to the office. And there was like two other POs there. So when I'm in the office, they put me in the wall, they pat me down. I didn't have anything on me but some money. So now the TFO agents come in, task force officers, agents, they come in. And they cuff me and stuff like that. So when they get me in the car and they telling me you're gonna get life and all this other stuff. You better help yourself and all that stuff. I don't know what you're talking about. Help myself. I don't know what's going on. So I was taken down to the building, the federal detention center. And when I got to the federal detention center, they put me in a cage. When I go into the cage, I see a handful of people. So this is how I get to meet some guys on the case. They locked
nine
people up.
You're alleged gang members. You never met them before.
Yeah, I never met these guys before. I never, so we all down there just like all in the maze, like, what's going on? So that's how that started. That's how, that's how that went down. And once I was in federal custody, it's in that building, it's so draining, the people's spirits is real down in that building.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
The experience is real down. The whole thing, this is the saying in the federal detention center. And it might be the saying around the world in federal detention centers. Get out their way before they roof you. Get out their way mean take a deal before they roof you. You don't hear nobody saying they're going to fight. You hear everybody saying, look, they get out their way, man. They're going to roof you. It's all you hear. So this is what I was hearing when I first came in.
So when you say, when you're saying they'll roof you, you mean like life in prison?
A lot of time.
Right. Longer sentence if you try to fight it. Exactly. So just take the plea, take whatever they want to offer you, and do your time and get out of there as quick as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah. How's that not extortion?
Yeah.
No, it's a crazy system. Yeah. That was one thing, James, that I knew before the trial, I know everybody pleads guilty. Everybody does, especially drug cases.
Yes.
So when I heard you guys, obviously, I was there and it was a drug case. I thought, okay. So why are these guys fighting? How nobody fights. Why are these guys doing that? So why did you plead not guilty?
I'm going to keep it totally honest with you. When I first came in the building, unfortunately, and I can say I've been doing a lot of time, man. It's just that, my mom raised me good. I went to Capital School and things like this. I had things I wanted, even though I was in a project. We had a nice house, My mom always had a car. Everything was clean. We had clothes and things like that. So what happened was I started getting into trouble doing things that, I wasn't supposed to do as a teenager, and it led into me to my adult life, and I'm not proud of it. I'm ashamed of it because I wasn't raised like that. My mother was a single parent, and she took care of her kids very well. I learned morals and principles from my mother. So I'm not proud of it at all. I can't change what happened, what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I can change, you know, what's going on with me right now. I can't see back to the things I did in the past.
So
when I first went in the building, you know, I'm kind of accustomed to doing time. So I always had the mindset before I let them roof me, I take something and get out the way. I even had this mentality in the state court, you know. So I'm hearing from guys in there, you know, they can give you 30 years, they can career you and stuff like that. So my mind was like, before I do 30, I do 15 years. You know, before I let them give me 30, I would do 15.
Right.
And I actually was calculating stuff like, well, then I'll probably make it out about 51.
Right.
This is how I'm calculating stuff in my head. You know, so, but then I got a message and I was found out that this particular confidential source they were using, he was corrupt. He was double dipping behind their back.
And he was. We know this. This was proven.
Behind their back, you know. You know, but we kind of find out. Well, we believe wholeheartedly in everything we present shows that they've been new. Shows that they knew what he was doing. You know, like you had to know. You've been an agent for years, more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be trained at this. You're supposed to be trained at these things. And we'll get into that too. So this is what I thought. And I was leaning to taking some time. They didn't offer me anything. You know, they didn't offer anything from the beginning. But this was my mindset. I'd rather do 15 years before they give me 30.
Right.
And I said, you know, I want to make a home for my mother and my family and stuff like that. So I felt, I got the word that this guy was double dipping and stuff like that. So I said, oh, well, if that's true, this case got to get throughout. Because you can't, like, his word is no good. Like, you can't do it. Like, you know, this is all I knew. I didn't see the case law on this stuff yet, but I'm just like, you can't do that.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah.
So
it's common sense.
Yeah. So now what happened was I wound up getting moved to the block that my co-defendant was on that, you know, they really have been targeting, you know, Naeem Gordon. And he started explaining this stuff to me. And there's also a few other guys on the block that I just met that was co-defendants as well. So we went to an evidentiary hearing in front of Judge Davis, June of 2017. So this when it came out that the confidential source got caught on a wire, or they seen him. I forget what was one. They even caught him on a wire, or they seen him coming from the target location. This was June 22nd or 21st of 2015. So he testified that they terminated him, but without his knowledge. They never told him that he was terminated. They said they terminated him, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lawyers was, you know, just explaining that they was questioning the agent, you know, because they, you know, they look at the phone records.
Right, so
and stuff like that.
So now the importance of this confidential source was that's what enabled them to get the wiretap to listen to the cell phone calls, and that's kind of how they got to all the defendants, correct?
Yes.
So if you throw out the confidential source, they never get that information. There is no case.
Yes, nothing, no case. And this is what they knew, and I'm gonna try to give y'all everything I know and you know so that I remember. So when this agent Sampson is testifying, he, you know, the lawyers questioning him and they were saying, well, he called over 200 times to the target, unmonitored, unauthorized,
and they're watching this cell phone the whole time. So they would see these calls coming
in.
Yes,
they would. They would pull the records and they would see this confidential source calling the target all day, at nighttime, everything.
200 times over about a month and a half or so, or a month.
Well, over the whole entire time, it was about. I mean, you know, the phone tab went up in June,
and then it ended in September or something.
I think it ended in September.
Yeah.
So he called over 200 times.
Right.
and he only made 9 purchases.
Right.
So where's the other 200? Where's the other 200 calls for?
The 9 purchases you're talking about is the controlled buys that the DEA sent him on.
Yes. So Agent Sampson testified that, well, this confidential source told us that he was making these calls to you know, keep the relationship there, basically. So, you know, the whole thing is this. They already have a relationship. So why you gotta keep a relationship? Or I think say he don't want to seem suspicious if he don't call.
Regardless, 200 times is a lot of phone calls to ask how your day is.
Yes. And they told him not to call them.
Right.
They told him not to call. You know, I got paperwork that can show that as well. So when Judge Davis heard that this particular this confidential source was coming from the location or heard on the phone, Judge Davis said he put his hand on his forehead, right? Leaned back in his chair and just spins around, was like shaking his head like I don't believe this. So Judge Davis said, I've been on the bench for 30 years. I never seen nothing like this. I never seen nothing like this. So I'm saying I'm going home. Once Judge Davis saying this, we going home. We getting out of here. But Judge Davis denied everything.
Did he have a reason why? Did he say why they allowed it?
Yes,
don't remember.
I can't really remember. But he ain't no good. He ain't no good.
And he wasn't the judge at trial, though.
No, he wasn't the judge. Judge Beetlestone was the judge at trial.
He
had retired or something like that.
He retired. Okay.
Well, actually, I met an inmate, right? In the federal building. He told me that he was the reason why Judge Davis got off the bench. I think he filed some type of paperwork or something. This is what he told me. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know for sure. Because this particular inmate, he knew a little bit about the law, and he said he filed something. I don't remember what was filed, but he claimed he was the reason. Now I don't know for sure now, but this is what he told me. And I forget his name, the guy, but he's from Philadelphia. So, Agent Sampson testified that these calls and another thing. None of these phone calls is about nobody's family. He's not asking how's your family doing,
right?
How the kids doing. All these phone calls is about drugs. And when we finally went to trial, they was questioned. Agent Sampson was questioned, like, you know, where's any reports at on this stuff? Like, you know, they didn't write a report that he called over 200 sometime during the whole investigation.
Right.
They wasn't write any reports pertaining to the CI, but they wrote reports about us. They didn't write anything that the CI was doing or they thought he was doing. You know, they supposed to write reports about everything.
Well, how can you? Because I don't think we got into this much, but with the controlled purchases, one of the big reasons we all knew he was double dealing, and he had actually admitted to it on the stand when he was testifying, the CS was. But his first buy, the DEA gave him $250, I believe. It was something like that, or
$500.
$500 to buy 2 ounces, right? Yes. And he came back and gave the DEA change. He gave him $100.
Yes.
But the next time he went to buy 2 ounces, they didn't give him $400. They gave him $500.
Yes.
And he came back with no change.
Yes.
And they didn't question him about that, according to their testimony. And then for the next several buys, however many it was the same thing. Sometimes they would send him in to buy 3, but they were always giving him $250 for an ounce. And he was always paying $200 and keeping that money and even making phone calls on the way to the buy to talk about him owing the money and having the money from other buys that he did off the record on the side. Yes. And so it was very obvious. I mean, I am it was very obvious to me as a juror to be like, this guy is clearly he's stealing money and dealing on the side. And the the police officers or the DEA agent testified they had no idea. Like, they were just shocked, blindsided. They had no idea when they found out, and they immediately terminated him. And that was one of the most egregious things in this trial on the stand that it just blew my mind. Like, then you're railroading these guys. Then you knew what you were doing was wrong and you did it anyway because it was obvious to anybody listening. And if this is what you do for a living, you should know that. Yes. So sorry to go on a little rant there, but
it was okay.
And what I thought was funny was it's not funny at all, actually, but the DEA agent, he said he searched the CS before and after, but he didn't take notes of it. He didn't take pictures of it. There's no video of it. He didn't keep a record of how much money the guy had on him before and after.
Yes.
There was no documentation on any of this pretty much the entire investigation.
Yes. No documentation on nothing he was doing.
Right.
But they documented everything we alleged he was doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I think about this case is it's a good look into how it works because they all expect you to plead guilty. So they don't have to do their job. They don't have to keep notes. They don't have to do anything because they expect you're going to plead guilty.
Exactly. Or cooperate.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
So anyway, continue the story. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. So like you said, they knew what was going on. They knew.
They had
to. But the backup, this proves how they knew what was going on. This put the icing on the cake. Well, in all our motions, right? If you look at all our motions, we've been alleging this, that knew what he was doing the whole time. And every motion we put in, we was alleging this, that this was going on. We even wrote Department of Justice and filed a 48-page complaint with exhibits saying this is facts. This was going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but to go back to the beginning, this proves everything. Before you become a CI, if you have a criminal record and on probation, you know, if you're on probation or parole, you got to get with your PO. And in this particular case, Agent Sampson testified under oath that in every proceeding, right, that he wasn't the one who talked to the PO.
Right.
He said he wasn't the one, right?
Right.
So remember, he's under oath. He said he wasn't the one who talked to the PO. So now, a month before trial, we was asking for the confidential source agreement to find out when he was signed up. So they gave it to us, and they said in March, as you know, the same thing as the DA-6 said. They say on the initial debriefing, you know, which is, I think, March 4th or something like that.
Yep.
He was signed up. So, again, through everything, he said that he wasn't the one that talked to the PO. So now, co-defendant by the name of Anthony Hall, he went pro se, and he was fighting for himself. So he called the parole officer as a witness. So the parole officer came and testified that she spoke directly to Agent Sampson. Directly. She said that her client, which is the confidential source, he called her and asked, can he be a confidential source? You know, CI.
Mm-hmm.
She told him, no, you can't. You got to get approval from your bank judge, which is the protocol. And I had a policy from the Attorney General guideline to, you know, how you handle a CI. She told him no. She said an hour later, I believe, Agent Sampson called her, she said. And he's a lead agent. Everything went through him. She said she told him no. Agent Sampson, no, he can't be CI, a confidential source. You got to get approval from the bank judge. So they went on and sent him out on bonds anyway before he got this approval.
Yep.
Which is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent him on a bond March 11th, 2015, March 19th, 2015, March 26th, 2015, and April 2nd, 2015. The PO testified he didn't get approval until April 6th, 2015. So then Sonny Moore, four illegal buys from the beginning. So Agent Sanson falsified this document in the beginning of the investigation. And the confidential source knew this. So mm-hmm. if a confidential source know this, he like, oh man, this is corrupt. I can do whatever I want to do.
Right.
Oh, that explains it. That explains how he was double dipping and getting away with it. It's like,
exactly. They know. They don't care. Man, this is court records. This could be pulled up. This is court documents. So
wow.
Also, to make these matters even worse, now we put in our Department of Justice complaint, the same issue, right? So investigator by the name of, let me read, I got it here. They say on August 16th, 2018, Inspector Eric Watson, Drug Enforcement Administration, DA Office of Professional Responsibility, contacted Agent S.A. Frank Sampson, Philadelphia Division, regarding a complaint sent to the OPR from defendants in Philadelphia case. S.A. Sampson stated he was the case agent for, they got it blacked out for the case, which involved the use of a DEA confidential source to make controlled purchases. S.A. Sampson said the case ultimately resulted in a Title III wiretap investigation. Okay, now I'm going to go to the end of this first page. And I'm going to read what Agent Sampson said to Eric Watson. S.A. Sampson stated that the CS was not on parole, but was on probation. S.A. Sampson stated he believed Task Force Officer Ephraim Torres, Philadelphia Division, received verbal authorization to use the confidential source from the confidential source probation officer. Right?
Right.
So Aiden Sampson lied to Eric Watson. Now that when he said that Ethan Torres got verbal authorization from this PO, right? Now, guess what Torres said? On the last page, Torres said, and this is, I got the paperwork. I got all my paperwork. Torres said he was certain the probation officer was contacted prior to establishing the CS mm-hmm. with the DA, but he did not know the identity of the probation officer.
So he didn't get verbal authorization.
He didn't talk to him. He said, I didn't talk to him. Then he said, Torres' opinion, the CS was probably not on parole as alleged in the complaint, or the CS would not have been established as a CS.
Right.
But Agent Sampson, you lied to the Department of Justice, y'all bosses. And I'm calling Eric Watson out on this. Eric Watson, get the transcripts. Listen to what the PO said. This is the beginning of the investigation, Eric Watson, from the Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility. He lied to y'all. In the beginning of the investigation, he falsified a document to further the investigation to get a wiretap. That's what he did. The PO didn't lie because the DA, when they cross-examined the PO, they stayed away from that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they asked the PO was, did he get approval on April 6th? They said yes. That's all they asked. We know he got approval April 6th, but he didn't get approval from the beginning.
Right, from March.
You can't start something all bad and then make it right.
And that started, I believe, the control purchases started in March?
Yes, it started in March. March 11th, the control purchase started. So the first full buy was illegal. So that means right there, Eric Watson, the guy that's incarcerated still, they should be getting free because Agent Sampson falsified that document to get.
The investigation never should have started.
It never should have started. Nowhere, period.
Not for, at least not with this CS.
Not with that CS, period. It shouldn't have started. And they didn't corroborate his story. this is another way to show they didn't care. They just was doing whatever they want to do. This CS, confidential source, told Agent Sampson that a year prior to them sitting down, which is on March 4th, 2015, a year prior to that date, he bought two soda bottles of PCP from the Target. Now we put in our motion a lease. In this lease, no Gordon wasn't in this particular property until June of 2014. So a year prior would mean that this confidential source got something in March of 2014. So how did you come to this particular building in March of 2014? No one's there. There's no nobody has an apartment in this building. The apartment, the leases, they didn't get a lease until June of 2014. So that right there, you didn't corroborate that. He was lying when he told y'all that. Wasn't nobody in the building until 2014 of June. And we put this as an exhibit with the complaint. This is an exhibit. See, they got to corroborate the story. It's a case. I forget the case. It's a presiding case that's leading case. You got to corroborate a confidential source. What'd he say?
And they never did.
They never did. Because they like, no, you lied about that. Because these guys didn't get in this apartment until June of 2014. You said you went there in March.
Right.
So, you know, it's just so much more, and I'm going to try to shed light on much of it as I can. So from the beginning, the case should have went nowhere. It should have been nothing. But again, the government do what they want to do. The DEA do what they want to do. The prosecutors prosecuted, and they knew what was going on because the prosecution got to look over the discovery. They got to look over the discovery, make sure everything right. There was two prosecutors on this case. There was one named Talante, which resigned and went somewhere else. Then it was this other one. I forget her name. Zork, and a guy named Zork, and I forget the lady name.
Soltis.
Yeah. So they got to look over the discovery. And under the ABA, the American Bar Association, you got to call misconduct. The lawyers got to call misconduct. You can't push a case through the court system that's tainted, that's corrupt. You can't do it. But they did it anyway.
Wow. I was thinking, I mean, if I was an attorney and I was given this case and I was supposed to prove conspiracy, I have no evidence of it.
They didn't have any evidence of it.
They didn't. And it was from the beginning of this case all the way up through the charges, it just didn't sit right.
Yeah.
So, Slappy, I have a question for you. Did you know that the case was thrown out basically at the state level?
No.
Okay.
And I'm going to explain that. For some reason, they didn't mention it.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't y'all mention that I was coming out of that building?
They never did. I had no idea, actually. I didn't.
They never mentioned it.
No, they never was.
And my lawyer even said, I wonder why they didn't mention that. And I believe that it opened up a can of worms.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the judge said lack of evidence of conspiracy and corrupt organization. So how is it a conspiracy over here in the federal system?
Yeah, in the state system, they said there's no evidence for a conspiracy, but the feds tried to charge you anyway.
Exactly. Man. So I went through stress and anxiety. And
yeah, so this all happened. You got initially, you said you initially got arrested, was it in 2015?
Yes, September 2015.
And then those charges got dropped, so you were out. And then you were back in to that. When was that? When did eight you get it?
Eight months later. I got out in January 2015. I was back in custody August 24, 2016.
And this trial ended December 21st of 2018.
I think it was the 19th.
The 19th. It was around that date. It was in December in 2018. So you were in prison, in federal prison, for over 2 years, and you were acquitted.
Yes.
Wow. So even the first thing when you were talking about getting arrested initially and having your preliminary trial get delayed twice and taking it forever, whatever happened to the right to a speedy trial?
Yeah.
I mean, it's you don't get that time back. It's
that's three years of your life gone.
That's so off. That's unbelievable.
And a lot of times, guys don't even notice, right? And guys scared to challenge the government.
I can't say as though I blame them. They're big, they're powerful, they have money, they have everything on their side.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to blame them. But when you do fight like you did, I mean, it's hard not to respect that. You know, you're going to fight for something. You're not going to plead to something you didn't do.
Yes.
And you won. And that's very rare.
Yeah, it's a blessing, you know. It's definitely a blessing, you know. Definitely a blessing.
Yeah.
So while you were, you were in prison for 2 years. You just passing time? I mean, what did you do during the day there? Were you preparing for your case? Were you, I mean, how, you know, is it hopeless in there? I mean, you said people are really down, which of course I would expect. But if you want to go into any of that, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I don't mind going into it, but before I go into it, I want to try to touch on some more. Significant parts of the trial and of the evidence, you know, which is important.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, there's a lot.
It's more. So as we know now, that it should have been an investigation because documents was falsified and nothing was corroborated. You know, so they just didn't care. You know, this is what they used to doing. So, you know, this is the thing, right? If somebody been doing something for the last 50 years or maybe longer than that, they're not going to stop. This is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The government, you get locked up. They say, listen, you know, if you go to trial, you're a career criminal. You're facing 30 years of life. This is what they tell them. You're facing 30 years of life if you're a career criminal. 20 of life, 25 of life, 30 years of life. Now, if you help us, and you know, we give you a 5K1, and we, you know, about 5 years. We get about 5 years out you. So this is why guys jumping on their boat.
That's tempting.
This is why guys jumping on their boat.
Right.
And the whole time, in their case, they may have falsified documents, planted evidence. They might not have a strong case. But they use these enhancements to, as you said, it's like an extortion or as a, you know, listen, get down with us, man, or you gonna get 30 years, man. You know, and people don't want to do their families and they girlfriends and stuff like that. You know, and so a lot of guys cooperate, and you know, they paint the picture for the government. The government, they go to law school, but nobody make them shows what they learned in law school. Nobody make them what's the word you use? Is it litigate? Is that the word?
Sure. Right.
Yeah, nobody, you know, they don't litigate because everybody take a deal.
Everyone plays. Yeah, they never have to go. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
This is why the conviction rate, what it is. It's not from people losing, going to trial. It's from people cooperating. And, I mean, I'm taking deals.
And I think in you know, for most people don't see that and don't understand that. A lot of people think you get arrested and you get your day in court.
Yes.
And it's just not how it works.
Not at all.
It's a kangaroo court.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what's that train? What's the movie? The Midnight Express court. You know, they will railroad you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of guys that's sitting throughout the world.
Shouldn't be there.
On trumped up charges,
yep.
Falsified documents, you know, all type of stuff. But people wouldn't know. Some people, they don't even get their discovery.
Right. They just plead.
some people don't get their discovery, and you know they try to hold people discovery. If you don't mention, if you don't argue or fight about, they're supposed to get discovery ASAP. Once you get incarcerated, within a few weeks you're supposed to have your discovery so you can look over your case. It takes some guys 9 months to get their discovery, a year, and they got to keep right. They got to write the judge, and they got to complain, and they have lawyers. Why I got to write a judge about something that my lawyer is supposed to get for me?
Right.
And even if the prosecution and the police weren't corrupt, you know, 9 months, a year later, they got to take the stand for something that happened that long ago. How are they supposed to remember stuff that happened? I mean, it's you're asking even if they are, even if they aren't corrupt and aren't bad dudes, like you're asking too much from someone, especially when lives are on the line like this. It's absurd. It's so corrupt. It's so rotten. It's so nasty.
Yeah. So then, once we got our discovery after that 17 hearing in June of 2017, we went back to the block, and it's a blessing. We just start finding all type of stuff. All type of stuff. We found. We heard on the phone when they made a call for when they ordered some PCP, this confidential guy out of the car, he made a phone call. I think he said, hey, I got this 64. You could have came to my house and got it, right? But at trial and at other motion hearings, they say they didn't hear this. They said something with the Wi-Fi is messed up. Well, you don't need Wi-Fi to record. You don't need Wi-Fi to record.
Right,
right.
To record something, you don't need Wi-Fi
right,
at all.
Yeah.
So they claim they didn't hear this till later when they listened to it again.
Right.
But there was another time he mentioned he could have came and got some money. The target could have came and got some money, or you know, I had the money. I left the money with you.
He did
twice. Twice he mentioned this on different occasions, and they claimed they didn't hear this until later.
The way it was clear too. I mean, he was on the phone talking and said I think he owed him $60 or something like that.
Yeah. One time was $60, and another time was $70.
Right. And he talked about it. And then they testified that they never questioned him about that. They didn't think it was weird. They didn't think anything of it.
Yeah. But y'all train officers. But no, but now this is another thing. Remember, it was a recording. One of the TFOs said to the confidential source, Agent Sampson finds it suspicious. You keep texting and calling the target. You keep texting and calling Naeem Gordon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Agent Sampson, the TFO said Agent Sampson finds it suspicious. So, Agent Sampson, you find it suspicious. Why are you saying it's cool for him to call and keep this report without reporting to y'all?
Right.
If you find it suspicious, and this was in May.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get the wire until June.
Mm-hmm.
So a month prior, something wasn't right. You didn't, you know. Now, remember, the handlers was Torres and Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were the handlers. They handled them. They took them to the bars and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, but it just so much lies and stuff through this whole case, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so then the wiretap went up, you know, in June. So, also in this particular case, we found that they planted evidence on an April 29th buy. Oh, let me go back. I can go back to March 26th by. In a March 26th by, they made the phone call and ordered 2 ounces of PCP, right?
Yep.
So you hear and you see confidential source, this is what he said. He said, we all hit them hard. I want the whole joint. I want the whole stash, one or the other. What would give a confidential source the audacity to tell cops, when you hit them hard, I want the whole stash. I want the whole joint. What would make them feel comfortable to say this? That's just like me walking up to a cop on the corner, and I see him staking something out. I say, damn, what's going on, officer? Oh, no, we raid the house over there. Oh, yeah, well, y'all hit him. I want something out of there.
Yep. He did. He said that on tape. He said,
that's incredible.
Yeah, the CS said, hit him hard. I want the whole stash.
Now, this is the thing, though. Now, the video shows Torres in the passenger seat putting his finger to his mouth, to his own mouth. Torres put the finger to his mouth, doing a shushing gesture, like telling the CS, shh. And then Boyd was in the driver's seat. He did the cutthroat gesture, like, cut it, like, stop, like, we record.
Right, right.
What did you do? We record.
Yeah, I think he said that. He said, not when we're recording.
So now they said about this at court, they didn't really give an explanation to it. They mentioned they mentioned the part about when you hit him hard, I want his whole stash. They were saying that, oh, that was meaning that we told the confidential source that if a lump sum of money was taken, he could possibly get a reward of that, part of that money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyer, Paul Hessenecker, which is not even Gorton lawyer, he said, well, I don't see that in initial debriefing.
Because it wasn't there.
Where is that in writing? That if they get a large sum, you know, he can get some of that money. They got to have everything documented. And this stuff wasn't documented. And in fact, Agent Sanders testified that his group, which is Group 23, was bad with paperwork.
He did say that.
He testified bad with paperwork.
He said, and that was throughout the entire investigation. There were several times he said that was a mistake. We just didn't document well. That was a mistake. That was a mistake. I mean, that was his testimony.
Yep.
I messed up. It should have been written down. It wasn't. He said that multiple times.
Yeah. Multiple times. So now, on that same particular buy, when the confidential source got to the door, he made an unauthorized call. And he's on video surveillance on his phone. So when he get inside the building, right, the target said, you said 2.5, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, here's the 2, and here's the half.
Yep.
Oh. So
and he
right there, they heard him ask for another half. They asked for more than what they sent them for.
And I think they testified that they thought he was talking about money.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
Now I got to go back some on a motion hearing we had. The lawyer by the name of Jack McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
He got kind of upset, so he said, he played the tape again. He asked Agent Sam, you know, listen to it. He played it again. He said, that's the target saying you said 2.5, right? He said, that's not the confidential source. That's the target asking you said 2.5, right? Then he said, right. Here's 2. Here's the half. He said, it's clear. So he said,
it was.
It don't even make sense. This is what he said at a motion. The lawyer said, it don't. Why would the target be giving him $250?
Right.
So he said, did he ask for half? So Agent Sampson said, yes. He asked for extra half.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there was to stop the investigation.
Right. It was very clear. If you could hear, if you heard anyone who hears the calls, you can tell, you know exactly. It's not even a question. It was infuriating that he was on the stand trying to say otherwise, because it was very clear that the target said, here's 2 and here's your half. And was that the Tucker John?
Exactly. So then I think the target said, you know, what you doing or something. He said he tucking it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And they testified, he did that because, you know, the cop, why do he got to tuck something? He is a cop.
Yeah.
He's an agent. When a CI become a CI, he's an agent. Why do he got to tuck his drugs? Because if he got grabbed on anything, he can say, well, call Agent Sampson.
Right.
I work for him. Why do we got to tuck anything? So even if Sampson didn't falsify the document, he kept everything straight. Once you heard that phone conversation, you supposed to say, listen, it's over. Where that half ounce that you just purchased? Where's that? Give it to me and come come on, you're going to jail. We locking you up, and that's it. We got to stop the investigation. We got to start. It's over. We got to stop it. You can't go further.
And there wasn't even in the jury room, no one even questioned that. You know, everyone said it was obvious he was getting his own half. It wasn't. Nobody believed Samson's testimony.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for everyone else, but that was the conversation. Everyone kind of said, yeah.
Yeah. So that's just another example. And, during that particular buy, Samson testified to, you know, when he heard it later, he said he heard that later.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, do a more thorough search on him. Like, do a more thorough, you know, we got to do a little more thorough. You know, this is what he said, you know, as he listened to this particular audio, he claimed he listened to it later. You know, he heard that. So, moving on. Now, on April 29th, bye. Now, mind you, at the motion hearings, we had also at trial. I believe we have that trial, but, you know, when they fill out applications for different things, like for warrants and stuff like that, they got to put in these warrants and applications everything that happened, how the investigation start, any buys that was done, anything, you know, because it's supposed to be truthful and honest when you present it to a judge. So, this is about the searches. They said he was searched for contraband, you know, money, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they was trying to spend the money thing. Like they were saying, well, he's saying contraband, money, weapons, drugs. So all this is under the definition. How is he allowed to carry money to a buy? He cannot carry his own money to a buy. From what I read and understand.
And they allowed him to.
And they allowed him to carry his own money to buys. So they say. So that's another thing that he lied about.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept if we look at all the transcripts from the motion hearings to trial, you would see everything is totally different from everything. When you testify, everything's supposed to be the same. No skipping the beat. Everybody will be in accordance with each other. So we're going to get to the April 29th buy. They sent him for 3 ounces. He made the call for 3 ounces. So they got him walking to the buy. All the videos show that. When he get back to the car, he hand him a bag with bottles of PCP in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this particular video, to me, to other co-defendants, to lawyers, and, you know, maybe to some jurors,
mm-hmm.
shows 2 bottles of clear, goldish-looking color.
Yep.
And also, and Anthony Hall called the expert on mm-hmm. video. And this expert broke down how he came to his opinion that it's 2. And, you know, what stages he took to get this opinion. And he also put arrows on different slides of these pictures, showing 2, like pointing to those 2.
It was clearly 2. It was very obviously 2 gold yellowish ounces of PCP.
Now, so my thing is, where's the third one at, right?
Yep.
Also, where's that extra 250 at?
Right.
Because he gave 750. So where's the 250? He didn't bring any money back. Now, I'm going to break that whole video down to you. So they put in the evidence. This what I'm saying about is the video, the buy video. It shows him going to get it, him getting in the car, and him giving it to his handlers. Now they got to put a picture. They got to take a picture of the evidence and put that into evidence.
Mm-hmm.
They put a picture of 3 green yep. alleged bottles of PCP. But the video shows 2 gold bottles yep. of PCP.
Oh, they're different colors too?
Different exactly. colors and different quantity. And it was very clear. This is not, it was very obvious when you look at it.
So one of them testified that and the light hit it. The light yep. came through the car. It hit it, and it turned it. It turned it a different color. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that's the case, right? Which is not. But that's the case. In that picture that they took of the three green, why did it turn back gold? So it turned from gold to green. It stayed green.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it multiplied by itself in the bag,
and a whole extra ounce popped in there.
Right. Yeah, that was really strange. We couldn't make out what happened there. We had no. That was really weird.
Yeah. So that's another thing that, you know, we'll have a whole case thrown out because it's you can't plant evidence. It's case law on this. It's case law on this. You can't plant evidence. You can't falsify documents. I read pertaining to this case. It had a definition with it. I had a case. Actually, it's a case called Mott versus Lucas. It was a criminal case, but it turned civil because they had a confidential source who was doing buys.
Mm-hmm.
14 guys got locked up. If you can, you can look for this case. It'll come up. 14 guys got locked up, and come to find out, everything wasn't right. The CIA was staging buys. An officer or two knew about this, and it was covering it up. But it all came out, and everybody got out of jail. Everybody got
not
out of jail.
Not in this case.
But not in this case. Yeah, everybody got
did
out
the
of
judge,
jail.
The judge, why did the judge allow this? Was this Judge Beadlestone or Judge Davis who allowed this?
This judge, Beadlestone.
Yeah. Did she say why?
No, she didn't say why. She gave her a ruling, and I forget what the ruling was. She was going off some of Judge Davis' rulings.
Okay. Because we didn't, like, as a jury, we don't hear any of this. All we hear is what goes on at the trial. So any of the preliminary stuff, any of the evidence hearings, we don't know anything about.
Yeah. Now, this is the thing, though. We didn't, and this is we put in our Department of Justice complaint. We explained to them that the lawyers was ineffective because they didn't know any of this we presented to y'all today. They didn't know any of this at that motion hearing in June of 2017. The only thing they knew about was the phone call to see I was making unauthorized and that he double dipped.
Right.
Had the lawyer looked over the discovery, they would have found all this stuff.
Yeah.
They better present all this evidence at court. But they didn't know this. So they didn't know about the plan of evidence. They didn't know about the falsified documents. They didn't know about these things because they was inadequate.
How about that?
Like this is what goes on. You know, you had these lawyers, and you know a lot of them. You know, they really be trying to get it over with. You know, if you got 20 guys a year, and everybody take a deal, you just collect that money real quick.
Yeah,
we ain't got to go to trial.
Now you had a court appointed attorney?
Yes, I had a court appointed attorney. Yes.
Now, how did that work? Do you have? Are you able to decline the attorney? Or do you just have to take whoever they give you?
Yeah, you take whoever they give you right there. And if, you know, you feel like he's inadequate, you can, there's ways you can get him removed. If the judge feel, go in your favor, you know, you can get appointed a new counsel. So, you know, that's what I did at first.
Okay.
What happened was, you know, me and my lawyer was bumping heads and, you know, I'm letting him know that we got to attack the CI. This was going on. Like, we got to start from the beginning. If this guy was dirty in the beginning, that's what we attacked the beginning. We don't go to the end of the case. We start at the beginning of the case. We started it. And, you know, a lot of lawyers felt that, you know, it wasn't their job.
Right.
But we was persistent and consistent with our argument. So I had to follow. I wrote a letter to the judge and asked for an ex parte here. Ex parte hearing is a hearing you ask the DA to remove itself from the court and I can speak about issues pertaining to what's going on, you know. So when I stood in front of the judge the day of the hearing, I had the ex parte hearing, you know, the DA removed herself, and I just told the judge that, you know, me and my lawyer, you know, we're not seeing eye to eye. It's things I want him to do. I want him to file motions, and he telling me that, you know, ain't no ground to file motions. This is what he tell me. So I said, I need to get things on record. You know, this guy was double dipping. He was doing things he wasn't supposed to do. And you know, this stuff, I need this stuff on record, you know, to preserve my rights. So the lawyer was saying what he said, you know, and the judge denied me to get another lawyer. You know, see, y'all try to work it out, you know.
Yeah, and, so you're just stuck.
Yeah, the judge denied me to get another lawyer. So we butted heads quite a few times. So, you know, but I was shocked of his defense, you know. I was pleased with it, and the other co-defendants was pleased with it, and I thought he did very well.
He did.
I didn't know none of the stuff he was, like, he never talked to me about, like, nothing he did that day. He put that together himself. He didn't talk to me about nothing, like, nothing he did.
He did a good job.
Yeah. Yep. So, that you know, they planted the evidence on the 29th, and that can have a whole case thrown out. You know, Samson is a case called, I forget the name of the case, but it dealt with the fruit of a poisonous tree.
Yep.
And Agent Samson was a tree. He the tree with all the poison and everything, all the limbs and the fruits that's popping off come from him.
Yep.
So the whole case should be thrown out, period. You know, so now I can move into, to go back a little bit to an April 2nd buy and an April 15th buy. Which is the same buy, but
yeah.
They put it off as two buys.
Yeah, that was kind of funny too. Rallo, is they presented the evidence for the two buys was the exact same video.
it's
it's like you're scratching your head.
I don't know what to do other than just laugh the way I did at that.
Yeah,
like how was that
exact same video?
That same video.
I mean, I could show this to my 5-year-old nephew and he'd say that wait,
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, and I'm going to try if I can to break it down correctly, the chain of custody. So when they made the video on April 2nd, they supposed to put the original copy inside a vault, a safe vault, and have an extra copy, you know, for evidence, you know. Like, you know, to pass around or whatever the case may be. So, on the April 15th buy, same video though. They supposed to put that inside a safe vault. So, the whole thing is this. Oh, they say they recorded over it or something. They say they recorded over it.
Yep.
And so, how can you record over something that you put in the vault on
yep.
April 2nd? You put that in the vault April 2nd. How can you record over anything? You go back to the vault.
Yeah,
they're supposed to enter the evidence into the vault, and once it goes in there, you can't touch it. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. Now, exactly. But you know, they have the actual copy, and they yep. said it was. They said and Agent Samson. I think he said he didn't ever use. It's the first time using that type of equipment or something like that. You're lying.
Yeah, he said. So I forget exactly what his case was, but he said something like he didn't. Reset it, and so it was the same video, or I can't remember what he said
exactly.
But he still, after it, if that's the case, he took it and put it in the vault when it was the same exact video.
Exactly. Now, guess what? They didn't write a DA-6. The DA-6 is a report. They didn't write a DA-6 explaining this to us. But guess what? The judge allowed them to write a DA-6 over 3 years later.
They did. It was right before the trial, right?
Right before, yeah. They allowed them to write a DA-6 3 years later.
Yeah.
We supposed to get all our evidence before trial.
Yeah, I think it was in October, and the trial started in November. That was really weird, too.
You know, so also, that was in our Department of Justice complaint as well. If I'm not mistaken, I'm about to look at it again, but I think Agent Samson said it was a malfunction or something with the equipment.
Yeah.
And no, he said this in the report.
Okay.
The Department of Justice.
Okay.
He said, this is Eric Watson. He said it was a malfunction or something like that. But in court, he said that, you know, he taped over it. That's what he said. He was saying, we taped over it or something. And all this is the court records. Anybody want to get the court records, it's court records. Get a PACER account, and you can pull transcripts from all the hearings and at trial. You can pull this stuff. And you will see contradiction throughout this whole case. Lies, contradictions throughout this whole case.
And not to bring it back farther, but even the CS, during the investigation, I can't remember exactly the order this was in, but he got on the stand and he was asked about, I guess he was interviewed when he got arrested for double dealing. He testified under oath that he had never been searched. He was never asked about anything. But then on the stand for this trial, he said, no, I was searched. But in this trial, he was obviously becoming state witness, and it was hoping to reduce his sentence by testifying.
Exactly.
And he changed his entire story on the stand in this trial. So, you know, which one do you believe? The first one or the second one when he's trying to get his sentence reduced? You know, that's kind of how I thought of that. He changed his entire story on the buys.
Actually, what they did was when he first got it, when they first get him, he told the truth. He said they wasn't searching me.
Yeah, he did.
You know, they told me I can keep the money. It'll be too much paperwork. He told the truth.
He did say that. That's what they testified that he said.
Now, they took another statement from him, I think, a month later or maybe a few months later in 2016, right? That's when he started switching it because they said, listen, you got to switch that up, man.
Yeah, if you want your sentence reduced.
So he switched the statement up. He switched it up, right? And I got the paperwork. So now, guess what? A month, a 2018, we had the motion hearing in front of Judge Beetlestone. But right before that motion hearing, they knew the stuff that we put in our motions, right? The stuff that we as legend. So they went back in 2018, right before this motion hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they asked them questions pertaining to the stuff we as a legend. And he was lying about that stuff too. So they just all the lies just snowball. It's one big ball of lies that that the DA got, you know, in their closet, man. And it's bulging out the closet. Mm-hmm. So why would you go back and get another statement? You went got a statement trying to get him to explain the stuff that we's a legend.
Right.
Of course he's going to switch it up for y'all because he know that he's trying to get this deal.
Do you know how long he's in jail for?
I don't know how much time he's serving or what they sentenced him to. I don't even know if he has been sentenced yet.
Okay.
But he's been incarcerated since 2016.
Okay.
So he had almost 3 years in as well. And you know what? To go back a little bit, I got the paperwork. Like I said, I got all my paperwork. They put him in a wiretap application on July. They put him as a target. The wiretap went up in June, right?
Right, right.
When they caught him double dipping, they were supposed to notify the judge who issued the wiretap.
Right.
They never notified the judge about that.
Huh.
But in July, they mentioned something about something, and I can't recall what it was. But in the July application for the wiretap for it to continue, like, you know, they put him in as a target.
Right.
So they put him in as a target. He was supposed to be on a case with us then.
Right. Right. He should have been involved, indicted with the conspiracy then.
Exactly. Because he's allegedly doing the same thing we were doing, making calls to Leslie by PCP.
Yeah. No, you're exactly.
So now, but I learned, and so is my other co-defendants, we learned that in this case law, when it says an agent or, you know, see confidential sources, they agents. They agents. You can't conspire with a target. It's case law on this.
Really?
That's why they put him on his own indictment.
Huh. Because he should. I mean, if what you're alleging is that there's a conspiracy, then he's involved in it.
Yeah. I don't care when he came in. He could have came in September 1st.
Right.
Making phone calls up until the raid. He could have made 8 calls.
Right.
Buying PCP. So if we made calls about this alleged PCP that they're alleging, they're alleging these things, he was doing the same thing.
Yep.
So why wasn't he on this indictment? They put him on his own separate indictment because they know that you can't, an agent or confidential source can't conspire with a target. You can't do it. But it happened, and he's on his own indictment.
Yeah.
Because they noticed. It would get thrown right out.
It's funny. Like, I was kind of joking when you said you had more to talk about, and I said, oh, there's more? But it's just... Like every step, it just blows my mind that every step of the way from the beginning, from the very beginning, all the way through to where we are now, it's just step after step of corruption. And just on top of that, just no one catching it or saying like, whoa, we need to like throw this out.
It makes me think this is how they operate. This is how it is every day, all over the country, all over the place. This is just the way it is. Because this is so, it wasn't like there was one mistake. I mean, the guy's entire testimony was, I messed up. I made a mistake. I messed up. I mean, multiple mistake after mistake after mistake. That's not a coincidence. That's not a mistake. If you mess up every time, it's no longer a mistake.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I wonder how many of his other cases are like this.
Exactly.
How many people are in jail? And look, and James, you said you take responsibility for what you've done.
Yeah.
But you would have been in jail for a really long time for something you didn't do. And how many other people are in that same situation right now in prison for something they didn't do because they get railroaded by the government?
Exactly. This is you know, I know people speak about a lot of things and like, you know, things that need to be done, things that need to be changed in society. But this is something that need to be changed in society.
I mean, our
criminal justice system is trash.
It's a huge, huge issue that just doesn't get talked about. Exactly. Not enough. Not to the degree it should be. Because there are people talking about it. But not enough.
Yeah.
And usually people roll their eyes. I said this when I met with James a couple times now. But I said this to him, is a lot of people aren't going to have sympathy for him.
Yeah.
You know, because he was involved in drugs. And so because of that, they think, well, do whatever you want. He's not even a human, right? Yeah. Like, lock him up, throw him away. He's a bad guy. It is infuriating. Look, we have a lot to say on the criminal justice system, but at least play by your own rules. You know, you can't just throw out your own rules and throw someone in prison forever. That's absurd. At least play by your own rules. Even if your own rules, I don't really like half, more than half the time. At least be... You know, at least be upfront about what you're doing. And if your job says to do X, then do X. Don't do Y and then say it was X and then overcharge and throw them in prison forever. That's how the United States gets the highest prison population in the entire world. It's by overcharging and giving people really long sentences that shouldn't be in jail.
Exactly.
And then force them into plea deals because
your courts are so backed up from having so many laws on the books that everyone is breaking the law every day, so they can arrest who they want.
Yep.
I mean, it's just the reality of it. Everybody, it doesn't matter if you don't have a criminal record. I guarantee you, speed. Everybody's breaking the law all the time. It's just they can decide who they want to go after.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. So, James, I know we've had you on a long time.
Yeah, that's cool.
If you have anything else you want to add? If you want to talk about, or we would love to have you on again if you want to talk about other experiences, maybe. But if there's anything you want to add, please do. And if not, that's fine. Because what we, you know, James has become a friend of mine. We text and we're going to stay in touch. And if you ever want to come back on, talk about other experiences you've had, talk about, you know, what life is like when you're incarcerated. So we aren't just throwing people in there like it's nothing for 2.5 years when they get acquitted. And I mean, they don't pay you, right? They don't say, hey, we kidnapped you for 2.5 years and you were found not guilty. So here's $1 million to get back on your feet. They don't do that, do they?
No. And that's basically what it was. You kidnapped me.
Yeah.
Yep.
You,
oh, yeah.
You falsified the documents, everything. You did all this to get me in custody.
So, and you were not guilty.
And I was not guilty. And they kidnapped me the first time, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wasn't in a warrant. I wasn't in a probable cause affidavit. You weren't supposed to stop me, search me, anything. I came out of the front.
That's a Fourth Amendment violation right there.
I came out of the front of the building, which is an apartment building, 3 stories. It's a line in there. You know, you weren't supposed to bother me. You supposed to pat me down. You supposed to do the Terry stop. Just pat my waist, pat my pockets. Don't go inside my pocket. You supposed to pat my pockets.
Now, when they did that search, did you agree to it?
No.
Did they tackle you? How did they confront you?
No, I was walked out the door, and you know, I was this is what happened. This is what happened. When they walked me out the door, I was padded, right? Nothing was found on me. I was laid on the ground after that, right? I was on the ground for a few minutes when they pulled me back up. And at the time, to be honest, I was high.
Okay.
I had some drugs in my system. And they walked me around to the front of the building and they patted me again. And that's when they found something. This time they went in my pockets.
Right.
The first officer on Broad Street did it correctly. He just patted my pockets.
But they didn't let you go.
They didn't let me go. They just patted my pockets. Now the second officer, when I walked around the corner, around the block, he went in my pockets.
And that's what I mean by like you know, I can hear people saying, yeah, but he did have drugs on him. But play by your rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want, nobody wants the police to have the power to search whoever they want, whenever they want. That's not good. It's not going to end well. Yeah, and it doesn't end well.
You can't do it. Like, follow the law.
Yes.
Like, I don't have no problem with, you know, if I did something wrong, I do my time for it. But don't lie and cheat. This is what they do down in the federal building. In the federal court system all around the world. They lie and cheat to get what they want, to get their victory.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they do. They lie and cheat. This is what they do. So,
yep.
I'm not saying all agencies like that. I'm not saying that. But there are those that's corrupt out there. You know, and I'm fearful of the DEA, the feds, any cops. I don't trust them. You know, they could plant evidence on you. They could do any of these things.
Absolutely.
They could do any of these things. So how do we fight against these people? You know, I was locked up, incarcerated. Why is Agent Sampson locked up?
Because
he purchased himself on the stand throughout the trial.
He did.
Purchased himself. Because if you look at the previous notes and testimony from other court hearings we had, everything's inconsistent. Like you purged yourself through everything.
First, he admitted to that too.
You lied to say you didn't talk to the PO, and the PO said you talked to him.
Yeah. So someone wasn't telling the truth.
But remember when I said the DA, when they cross-examined him, they stayed away from that.
Yep.
Because they know.
Yep. Now, there was something.
That's why Anthony Hall asked for him to be arrested for some perjury he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
did
anything? Y'all wasn't in the courtroom.
Did anything? Oh, did he really? Because I know he was.
No, y'all wasn't in the courtroom.
He was
straight up and said, "I would like Agent Sampson arrested for perjury." And guess what Agent Sampson did? He started smiling and laughing.
Of course he did. Why was he sitting at the table the whole time at the U.S. Attorney's table?
I don't honestly know. And this is something we question. Like it's like he's cheating. He can hear and he can hear what they saying. And like it's like why would an agent that's gonna have to testify again get on the stand? I mean, be there right next to the prosecution.
Yeah, that was
listening to everybody's testimony.
And I don't know how that works with the court system, but it was really kind of weird that you have two U.S. attorneys sitting where the prosecution sits, and then they had their witness right there with them the entire trial. I don't know why. I mean,
oh, they're on the same team.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's all it is.
It's exactly right.
Yeah. So, again, I'm wide awake, man. We can do this all night, man. You know, like my thing is this, It just rubs me the wrong way, man. That you know, like what's going on? It rubs me the wrong way, man. And it's sad, man. It seems like if you don't have a lot of money, you can't expose these things.
It's tough.
If you're not a celebrity, or if you're not you know, an actress, or you know, someone with a lot of money, or businessman, or you know, whoever. I'm nobody. I mean, you know, I had nothing. I had nothing. So. You know, people might not want to hear from me. You know, all I can do is keep trying to find avenues to get this heard. You know, I came home and I was able to contact a journalist by the name of Samantha Milan from Inquirer, Philadelphia Inquirer, and I contacted her. I sent the paperwork, documents, and she started put the story together. She interviewed me. She interviewed other co-defendants. And it's a blessing this story was able to be placed in the Philadelphia Inquirer on the front page. And it's entitled, How Informant Ran Drug Business While Working with the DEA. So for those who are listening, you can find this on, you can Google it. It'll come right up, How Informant Ran Drug Business While Working with the DEA. And it speaks to that informant, and it's also hinting that these agents knew what was going on.
Yep.
That's how I took the article.
Yep.
They had to know what was going on. You know, so, you know, the fight don't stop. The fight don't stop. And I think it's people around the world are incarcerated not the correct way. Not the correct way. It's not fair. You know, it's actually poor people. It's our, you know, we poor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we, you know, the inner city, you know, we're poor. It's, you know, you got some white guys incarcerated wrongfully, Spanish, black, Asians, you know. I'm not racist at all. You know, I'm speaking for everybody. I'm speaking for everybody.
And a lot of these guys, you know, they don't get the chance to tell their story. And I don't want to say they're forgotten because, but maybe some of them are.
Yeah.
You know, you're just in there and you don't know what life's like on the outside. You don't know what your family's doing.
Exactly.
Maybe you're in for a long time and your family visits for a while, but that's stressful on the family too. And you know, it's a really sad situation for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a first-hand experience guy. Like I know what it is to, like, my mother, she loved me to death, and that stuff worry a parent, you know, being in jail and stuff like that. It worries a parent. And I put my mother through it for a long time, and all that stuff out my system now. So, you know, I'm not on that wave, as a word that they use nowadays, wave. Like, I'm not on that wave.
Good.
I'm not on that legal wave no more, you know.
So tell, what are you doing now? Can you tell us about your T-shirts and be yourself?
Well, when I was incarcerated, you know, I did a lot of thinking, and I'm a business-minded person. I also read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I forget the author name, but it basically just speaks about, you know, how poor middle-class people need to learn how to invest their money, need to learn how to save and do things like that. And I'm a prime example, and other people I know as well are prime examples for this because, you know, we wasn't taught financial literacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all we knew was to make money, whether working or other ways and spend it. We didn't know. We don't know how to invest. We don't know how to save. We don't know how to budget. We don't know these things, and it's not being taught in the school system. So, but I was fortunate enough to be introduced to this book by somebody, and ever since I read the book, that's always been my mind frame. But I always, you know, land up in incarcerated by chasing the lifestyle. You know, being addicted into chasing that lifestyle, which had I put all these years into the all the years I put into the street life, had I put it into the legal life, I may be a millionaire by now.
Could be. Then,
you know, so I'm not crying over spilled milk. I'm 44. I'm still young. I still got my health, you know, but I'm broke. I don't have nothing. You know, I'm trying to start something from the bottom. You know, it's stressful. It's frustrating, you know. You know, it's just a lot, you know. I had my days where, you know, I'd be like, it ain't working. You know, I had my down days where, though, I just, you know, I think negative sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to think about what I just went through. I got to think about my family. I got to think about, you know, this message I'm trying to get across to the youth as well. You know, it ain't really about me no more, you know. For the most part, you know, I live my life, you know. It's about, you know, it's a lot of youth crashing, meaning they just running into the wall because they being taught wrong things. And if it don't stop or change, they're going to have to build more jails.
Yeah.
You know, and jail is just nothing but slavery, another form of slavery.
You nailed it.
Yep.
You know, so
it's absolutely correct.
I don't want nobody to be enslaved by injustice or, you know, I don't want nobody to be enslaved by, you know, mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to sell drugs to make money. You don't have to rob, kill, steal, do these things to make money. All guys got to do is switch your hustle. It's the same hustle.
It is.
It's merchandise.
Yep.
Switch your hustle. That's it. The same consistency and ambition and things like that a guy may have that's doing illegal things, put it into something legal. That's what we got to do. But it'd be hard because some people have done it for so long.
It's hard to break habits.
I did it
but
for so long. And it's out of me. It's out of me. It took so long to get out of me though, and I don't have nothing. I don't have nothing to show for anything I did in the streets. I had nothing to show for. So, you know, again, I'm not glorifying no streets of no the street life, no way, shape, or form, because I got uncles and aunts who worked all their life and did things like that, and they live in the art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got cars and they got nice houses and things like that. So, you know, you can have a life without being in the streets. You can have a peaceful life without being in the streets. So I had an idea, and I didn't really get a chance to push it yet because, you know, my financial state, you know, like I said, I had nothing. I have a good woman in my corner, you know, helps me to the best of ability, you know. And what I want to start is called Be Yourself. I want to start a campaign called the Be Yourself campaign. And I'm targeting youth as well as adults, male and female. Be yourself. I wasn't raised to be in the streets. So I wasn't being myself. I got caught up in peer pressure. You know, I see my friends hustling, buying sneaks and stuff. So I'm like, damn, I want to be a part of that crowd. So this is what it was. This would be for the people around the world. This would be the people we hang around. You know, it pulls us in. I'm from a project. I'm from North Philadelphia. Raymond Road Projects is one of the worst, if not the worst, project in Philadelphia. We had the biggest project. We had about 7 buildings, and we had row homes. Mm-hmm. They knocked the buildings down. They found dead bodies and everything, under the elevators and everything. So, you know, the buildings was knocked down. We were the first buildings in Philadelphia projects, you know, to be knocked down. Our buildings was knocked down, I think, 1993. They was blew up. And people cried when our buildings blew up from Diamond Street because, you know, we love where we come from. We're Diamond Gang, but we love where we come from.
It's take like pride a big in where you're from. Yeah.
It's like a big family. Listen, people literally took rocks and bricks and cement from this rubble.
From the building.
From the rubble. Listen, if you go to Raymond Roller Projects, and it allow you to see some pictures. Or maybe we can get together one day because I'm a member, and I can show you these pictures of rocks and rubble and stuff like that. Yeah. Of the buildings falling. Like, you know, people was hurt when this happened. You know, because people been in these buildings since the 60s.
Right.
You know, the 70s and the 80s. And they blew these houses up and they had to relocate everybody to different locations.
Everyone gets separated.
Exactly. Everybody got separated, you know, but a couple times a year, in the summertime, it'd be about three cookouts. Different people throw, and everybody from the neighborhood come to the cookouts.
Still stay in touch with everyone?
Yes, those who moved away, and, you know, I just went to one about 3 weeks ago. You know. Yeah, the day we had breakfast, I went to it and I had fun. I enjoyed myself, and I was able to sell some of my shirts because it's a slogan to say I will always and forever be a diamond. It's not just for Diamond Street, you know, and I'm not just targeting people from Diamond Street. I'm targeting people from around the world. Everybody a diamond in my eyes. So this is how people should feel about themselves, no matter what color you is, race, what you believe in. You know, it don't matter. You should feel special about yourself. And a diamond is a precious stone. You know, so this is something I'm trying to push and get started. The Be Yourself campaign, and you know, that goes into feel special about yourself. You know, we all diamonds. Y'all diamonds. My girl diamond. My kids diamonds. We all diamonds. Like, we all special. You know, and this is what I'm trying to push to the people around the world. You know, be yourself. To the youth, be yourself. To the adults that's trying to be other than they self, be yourself. If your mom didn't raise you to be a hustler, a robber, a killer, why are you being like that? Get away from those who are leading you that way. If you're of age now, you're adult, get away, because all you're gonna do is go to jail or get killed in the streets, or you might make it out with a couple of hours. But it's not worth it to spend 20 years of your life in jail to make $50,000, because you're gonna wind up spending that $50,000 on a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And commissary money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not guaranteed you're gonna come out of jail.
That's true.
It's not. You can die in jail. You can get killed in jail. You know? So, who want to spend the rest of your life in jail? Not me. I can't, like, you know, I probably cry every night I had to do life in jail. I don't know, like, you know, what I would do if I was in that situation.
It's just,
that's my whole thing. For anybody from Philly may hear this, you know, my name Doyle. I'm from North Philly, Raymond Roller Project. You know, I'm trying to, you know, help save the youth and help save some of these adults. You ain't got to get high to enjoy yourself as well. You don't got to get high. You should be high for life, high that you live in, high that you got a family. You know, this should make you feel happy. This should make your spirits be high, because some people don't have family no more. Some people, Some people families disown them, and you know, a lot of stuff that go on, you know, with family and friends and things like that, you know. So that's what I'm trying to do, man. I'm starting from the bottom, you know, and I'm trying to rise to the top, but for the cause. You know, the cause is to be yourself. The cause is feel special about yourself. Feel like you're a diamond. You don't have to commit crimes to get further in life. You don't have to do it. You can start a business. You can be an entrepreneur. It's, you know, you can get a job. You know, it's too many ways. Like,
that's the answer.
Just because your friend got a Benz, you don't got to get a Benz. Get a Maxima.
Still know? Get you where you got to go?
Yeah, get a Maxima. You know, you ain't got to get an Audi. You know, get a, Altima. You know, so get what you could afford. That's the thing. We living beyond our means, and you know, we in debt and stuff like that, and we don't have to do that. You know, just be happy that you're living and be happy that you got family. And just take it one day at a time and, you know, stay positive. That's what I try to do. Like, I really try to. Like, I am doing it. You know, I don't know, man. Just, you know.
No, I don't know. It's a great message, man. It's a great message.
Yeah.
And we want to help you spread it as much as we can.
Yeah.
So, you know, I appreciate you coming on. We'd be happy to have you on again in the future to talk about any topic you'd like. And we'll stay in touch.
Okay, I appreciate it. Appreciate you inviting me on. Y'all have a good night. And I'll talk to y'all soon.
Thanks, James.
All right, thank you so much, James.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
All right, you too.
And we're back. Again, a big thank you to James Nixon for coming on the show and telling his story. It's, you know, a lot of that, hearing it from him, was very new to me.
Yeah, that was the first time Rallo spoke to him.
Right. And so my, it's just so, I know I was saying on the episode, but hearing his side of the story, hearing about everything that went down, it's just so unbelievable. And like we've said before, it's not a coincidence that Slappy just happened to be on this case and James just happened to be, you know, involved in this too. This is standard protocol. There's no doubt about it in my mind. You hear other cases of similar things happen, and that just cements it even more. We're not just by happenstance hearing about this and having the intimate details about this trial. It's unbelievable. So make sure to go and check out, if you haven't listened to it already, episode 153, where Slappy gives his side of the account. And like many others, it was like a tractor beam sucking people right into this. So hopefully it does it, and make sure to go out and share these two episodes.
And guys, if there's anyone listening who, I mean, would be capable of helping James or want to buy a t-shirt or something, we're going to work with him a little bit and try to get a website up and running. He's trying hard. It is not an easy thing once you get in this cycle of prison. The system's designed to keep you in. You have, you know, parole and getting paroled. It's not easy. One slip up and you're back in, and now your rap sheet's a mile long. And he's really trying hard to live, you know, a legitimate life. And once the t-shirts are actually pretty cool too. So when we get this up and running, if there's any way you can help him out, or you want to purchase a t-shirt because it's a nice t-shirt. Or if you host a podcast and you want to have him on, I'm sure he would be willing to do that. He wants to get the word out about this. As he mentioned, he feels like he doesn't have an outlet. And so anyone with a show, if you want to have him on, I'm sure I don't want to give his time away, but I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to you and go on. Anything we can do for him, I think, would be great. So just want to leave it with that. And
And that'll be it's a good free market success story. It's about his t-shirt business. So he comes out and you know, has the sense and the ability and goes out.
He has
and
business sense.
Right. And goes out and starts a business. So hats off to James for, you know, really taking a, because it'd be very easy to just be so negative and angry, but you know, he was obviously frustrated, upset with what happened to him, but I mean, he's a positive guy and he's making something of it and trying to help other people out. So, you know, hats off to James.
Absolutely.
So again, our show notes page is mcflugel.com/155. I'll post that article from the Philly Inquirer that he was talking about.
Sure.
How they talk about the informant. I believe I read that a little while ago. I remember reading it and being like, how in the world this case even? But
yeah, there's a lot to this case.
Yep, and I'll link to the previous episode 153 for part one of this story. So, have anything else, Slappy, before we sign off?
Just don't forget to gas up your tractor.
Yeah, I already made the reference.
Okay.
It was so good you didn't even notice it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.